Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's Denver's home for today's comedy, Comedy 103.1. It's Big Mike. Excited to get this man in the studio. One of the biggest names coming out of the Middle East. And he's made everybody laugh from New York to Los Angeles, yep, but also Dubai to Lebanon. But right now, he is in the Mile High City tonight.
Yes,
we have Nimmer. What's up, man?
How you doing, Big Mike? Thanks for having me, man.
Welcome to Denver, Colorado.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
So tonight, you're at Comedy Works South, and this is your first time in Denver. So you've been all over the world, but the first time here in Denver. What, you know, I have a lot of comedians that have, you know, been coming here for years. Have you been able to talk to anybody to get, like, you know, any feedback on Denver yet? Or
I just like to go to a place, rent a car, and just discover stuff. And I ran into Ted's Montana Grill, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Did you enjoy?
Oh, my God.
This is a glowing recommendation.
Oh, my God. I'm glowing. I mean, I don't know if there's better places and I'm just ignorant about it. But, I mean, this bison stuff, I've been there 2 days in a row now. I'm like, give me that pot roast. Let's do this.
I mean, we might have just found yourself a sponsorship.
Yeah.
Ted's Montana Grill.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So, you know, I just like to, you know, drive around. I don't like to ask people because usually when you ask people, they give you touristy stuff.
Right, right, right.
I like to go and dive in. And it's gorgeous. I mean, look at this. I'm looking out your window right now. I don't know if you guys think the same thing, but the open skies and the different, like,
well,
all the greenery.
Say,
you
came
gorgeous.
On an interesting day. It's like the first day where it was just cold or cooler today.
But I've,
like,
been here for 2 days now, so I've been driving around.
Okay.
I love it. I think it's beautiful.
You've got to experience a few different seasons all in a few days span or so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It might snow by the end of the day. Who knows?
Great.
So we have Nimmer in the studio. He's going to be at Comedy Works South tonight. First time ever. You can get those tickets at comedyworks.com. Mm-hmm. What's been going on with you, man?
Nothing much. I mean, we've been on this world tour just going everywhere. And when I came to the U.S., couple years ago, and then we started this tour back in January. It was supposed to be, like, you know, like 10-15 major cities in America, and that was that.
Yeah,
but it was so successful, they asked me next, like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to do comedy for America, you know. I want, like, send me everywhere.
Right.
And I'm going to Nashville, Tennessee soon, and I've been to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I've been to all these places that normally a comic, especially an Arab comic, I think, wouldn't imagine himself saying, I want to go to these places because the community isn't here.
Right.
But I'm here for everybody. My comedy is supposed to be for everybody. If I could unite people in the Middle East, I'm going to do it here. So that's what I'm about.
Well, and so, you know, when I think of comedy hubs, you know, especially, you know, you got to hear Denver, I think of Portland, Boston, New York. You know, I wouldn't have thought Lebanon. I wouldn't have thought there was a comedy scene in Lebanon. It just wouldn't be one that popped in my head. But not only is there one there, but you kind of started it.
Yeah, there wasn't one until I started.
Yeah.
I mean, all across the Middle East, there wasn't any stand-up comedy industry.
Yeah.
So I had to bite the bullet, you know, and do the first in every single country and kind of set up the infrastructure, set it up and blaze the path for other comics to follow. And they're following. It took a good 10 to 11 years until you started to get a solid scene developing where you have a lot of comics practicing. We haven't had any other comics doing specials yet, but it's on its way.
Was that your plan when you started to
create my own competition? Yeah.
To create your own competition.
Because it's necessary that if somebody hates me, they have somebody else they can point to, or else they hate the craft.
Yeah, you don't want that.
You don't want that. It's not healthy. I want people to say Nimmer sucks. I like this woman or man, as opposed to, like, Nimmer sucks, I hate comedy.
Yeah.
Stand up.
So what was step one? How did we, like, when you were starting to do comedy over there, like, what did you have to start doing? Because obviously there wasn't an infrastructure for it.
No, I'd go to venues like bars and clubs, because Lebanon has an incredible night scene, like best in the world that I've seen. And then you go and tell them I want to do stand up, and they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, give me a mic, I stand up, you bring in a crowd, and they're like, and there's no musical act, there's no band. Why would people pay money to see just you on stage?
Right, right.
So I tell him, give me like a Monday, the day that the worst day of the week.
Yeah.
I won't take any money. I'll fill it up for you. I'll prove myself. That's what I had to do. So I had to like, you know, sell the concept and then continuously build the business. And the difficult part of it is I never had a club I could go and work 5 minutes in material or 10 minutes or what. I always had to do an hour and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that was the worst. It was so much anxiety.
So for all you young comics that are out there, are you upset that you just have to do a few open mic nights? He had to create comedy in Lebanon, okay?
Create the stage.
He had to create an entire country, the whole Middle East. He had to create comedy, like, you know, get it going. So go do your open mic nights. Get over yourself.
Sure. They're wonderful. When I first came here, I'm doing like 5,000 people shows. When I first came here, I was like, can I do an open mic?
Yeah.
I want to experience that.
Well, I was going to say, you know, because when you were, you know, coming from overseas, you started to build such a big fan base, you were doing thousands upon thousands of people. And when I think of a comedy club, I'm like, well, you know, it's just a couple hundred when you have a packed house.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you started coming to the U.S. and, you know, maybe an audience that didn't know you, did it feel like you were starting over again, like your early days in Lebanon?
That's why I came here.
Okay.
I mean, the thing is, I got so big in the Middle East and in Europe that it became a thing where it became a bit easy because the people love you already. They already know what you're about. Sometimes you don't even have to tell a full joke.
Yeah.
You can build on something you've said in the previous. I've done seven comedy shows. So it's like I said, let me come back to the U.S. where people don't know me.
Mm.
Walk into a club. They announce me as this guy's called Nimmer. He's from the Middle East. That's it. They don't mention credits. They don't do anything. I get up. And if I can walk away their champion, then I've done a good job. That was so it forced me to get out of my comfort zone again. Right. And that's I think it's what it's about, right? It's like a martial art. It's a craft. You want to keep getting better. That's the only way to do it.
Well, you made your way to Comedy Works South, and I mean, you know, Comedy Works only books the best. So you're obviously doing
something right. There you go.
You know, just within the United States, there's whether you go to the South or the Northeast or whatever. There's different. You can just tell there's different tastes for comedy in this region. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the U.S. versus the Middle East. Is there any like notable differences in humor, or do you find people kind of laugh about the same things?
Well, America in general is more politically correct, so you have to do a bit more work. I've noticed, from touring over here that you can't just dive into it.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? If I want to do a joke and the punchline is ISIS, I can't just go into it because then people freak out. Like, they freak out because they think it's inappropriate to laugh at situations where people are dying.
Right.
In the Middle East, people are dying all the time. So if you're not going to make jokes about it, you're never going to make jokes. So for us, we use humor actually to fight back.
Yeah.
You know, like we fight against ISIS by making fun of them. Mm. We fight them at the border, but then we obliterate their psyche by just like humiliating them.
Well, if you did a joke on ISIS and you hear somebody in the audience say, ooh, be like, I did that joke in Lebanon.
Yeah, that's what I say. That's what I say.
I did that in overseas. So come on now.
That's what I say. It's not just here. Even I was in Winnipeg, Manitoba in Canada. And I did a joke, and the punchline was ISIS, and this one girl's like, wow. And I was like, oh, are you a fan?
That's Canada.
Like, I didn't know what else to say. But
what were you expecting from Canada?
I'm like, why can I make these jokes in the Middle East, but I can't do them here? What's wrong with you people? Let's do this.
So you started here, not started, but you had already lived, you were a U.S. citizen.
I grew
citizen.
Up here, yeah.
So what got you to Lebanon, and then what brought you back?
Well, when I was 11, my dad wanted to take us back to Beirut because he was like, we need to go where it's safe. Because he felt that America was dangerous to bring up a child because he was like, we had these, they would send sketches to the house in San Diego. Like, there's this guy, watch out for him. He's like molesting children or whatever, kidnapping him. And then they were afraid of like drug influence. You know, you watch the news, they dramatize everything.
Right.
My parents bought right into it. And they were afraid that we get influenced, that we wouldn't be family oriented. My dad was like, let's go to Lebanon because in Lebanon, it's like the safest place in the world. Like, you know, you can walk the streets, you can leave your door. The only problem is if there's a war. Apart from that,
you're good. Yeah.
You know, at least you see the threat coming from a mile away.
There's a lot of countries. If you get rid of the whole war element, it's probably a great place to live.
So that's why we went back. And the first year I was there, I despised my existence. Like, I hated it. I come from San Diego. You know, you leave your friends, you go there isn't electricity. There's bullet holes in your room. And there's like a rock. First time we went to the house, there was like rocket shrapnel.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Dad, there's rocket shrapnel here. He's like, it builds character. It's good. Rockets build character. So, you know, it's like that harsh upbringing, and a year in, I fell in love with what it is about Lebanon that keeps people going back, and it's the spirit of the people. It's like it's an existence where people have realized everything that could be done to make you nothing has been done, and yet you're still here. So you it's a very resilient kind of spirit.
Well, to do that, and then also go from that, and then do you find humor in life and find comedy.
Oh my God, you have no idea what they have the
laugh.
Best sense of humor in the world. They're constantly making jokes. Even if you go to a funeral, the first day, because they do like 3 days of like people accepting condolences, the first day you'll have, you know, it'll be pretty serious. But by the end of the first day, the second and third, it becomes like a joke-telling thing. Because it's kind of like, for us, it's like, okay, the bad thing has happened, right? The bad thing has happened, and it's terrible, and we all accept that. But we can't let this get any worse.
Yeah.
Let's use it and try to, you know, they start telling jokes and stories about the deceased. And even, you know, during war and stuff, like when ISIS was blowing themselves up in my country, and the way we got them to stop is we just kept making jokes.
Yeah.
So they detonate and kill, you know, two suicide bombers because they go to a hotel, and then we'd respond by this viral thing going of an invoice at a hotel that clearly overcharges them, and we're like, well, there you go. You know, this is
they're not going to do that again.
That's why they're blowing themselves up. The bill's too high. Okay. You know what I'm saying? So it's like it's that kind of stuff. And there was one time where they the day before the first Paris attacks, three ISIS suicide bombers killed 56 Lebanese people, and the next day we didn't even close the country didn't close down. We acted like nothing happened because we don't want you to think you got to us.
Right.
And they go to the street where the bombings happened. 56 people died, and this guy's sweeping up the street. And they ask him in Arabic. They're like, "What do you you know what how are your emotions?" And he points to the traffic. I'll never forget this. And he's like, "There's still traffic in this goddamn country. What is it going to take? Come back. There's too many." And he starts laughing. And people are like, "Why did that happen?" I'm like, "Well, imagine that." You know, ISIS the next day turn on the television, excited to see how they've decimated the country. And this dude's making jokes on the place where you did that. And then the second thing is there were five suicide bombers, but two of them were standing too close to their friends and they ended up getting caught in the blast and dying. So what we did, we thought that was so funny. We released an instructional manual for like safe steps to a successful detonation for like two. And we're like putting it online for the enemy. Like we're taunting them. Right. They never attacked again.
Right.
They were so hurt psychologically that they couldn't do it because the thing is these people thrive on getting into people's minds and when they can't do it they're just like let's Lebanon's a whole it's too gangster for us so we use humor to fight back
well and it's a great tool to do it with we have Nimmer who's going to be at Comedy Works out tonight. Get those tickets at comedyworks.com while you can. Right now we're in the being able to I always think that traveling the world is important for you to get different perspectives, meet different people. Right here in America, we have a very crazy election going on right now. We're like, 30 days out, Have you been keeping up with it all?
Of course. Of course. Are you kidding me? I'm American, but I'm also Arab. So,
I know politics. People. My feeling is there's obviously a lot of people in America who aren't paying attention given what's going on.
I'm telling you. I am paying attention and it's getting out of hand.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things happening that shouldn't be happening. When people in the Middle East are looking at the American election and saying, oh, Trump is kind of like one of our leaders, that's not a good thing. Do you know what I'm saying? That's not a good thing. And by the way, I'm not saying whether or not I like him or anything. I'm just saying, factually, there's elements.
All I want to do is repeat. He said the people in the Middle East are saying that that's like one of our leaders. So for all of you that are so pro-Trump and anti-ISIS, he's using the kind of the element of fear.
I mean, you can hate Hillary.
Yeah.
You can definitely hate Hillary and say I don't want to vote for her, but to say I hate her so much I'm going to vote for the alternative isn't the way to go. Unless you believe in Trump, then go for it. But I mean, the things that Trump is saying is dangerous because America is the bastion that the world looks to do the difficult thing. I was saying before that America's like Batman. It can kill, but it doesn't.
Right.
And it's harder not to kill. It's harder to take the righteous road, but that's what America's about. So to be able to say something, to be on a stage and say, I'm going to put you in prison if I'm elected, that's literally like I'm looking at people I've seen in my land that have caused a lot of violence and death and destruction. And the rhetoric, the hate rhetoric, the speech of revolution, this is not America. And even if you're using it so that in 30 days you then come and say, oh, I respect her, it was a great campaign. If you lose or if you win, she says he did a great campaign. You're doing damage you shouldn't be allowed to do. Not in America. This is the American spirit. It's the greatest spirit in the world.
If Hillary were to win, though, it'd be pretty gangster if she finds a way to lock him up. I mean, I think it would just be fine. She says two can play at that game.
Holy cow.
Two can play at that game.
Oh, my God. I never thought of that.
I think that would just be hilarious.
She just stays silent and then just does it.
She's like, there's a lot of stuff you did illegally. We looked into your tax returns. You were working with Russia. It's funny how he's hacking our emails and you want political prisoners. But anyway.
Oh, my God. No, this isn't how it should be. And I always thought that I just don't know what's going on. I just don't know what's going on, and I think I have theories about the different strategies that are being implemented by both candidates.
Yeah.
And all I can say is that it's a bit just overall, it's just been a disappointing cycle.
Look, when Election Day wraps up, all of a sudden, you know, all the TVs are going to switch to Ashton Kutcher saying we got punked,
right?
And so yeah, it's all good. It's been a big elaborate MTV show.
You think so?
So
you think so?
Well, we want to thank you for making time for us. It's a Comedy Works South tonight. Comedyworks.com. Get your tickets while you can. We've got Nimmer. If you not like, if you want to even like learn more, where can they find you on like online and social media?
Nimmer is spelled NEMR.
Yep.
And just go to NimmerComedy.com. And even if you forget that, put Lebanese stand-up comedian. I'm the only one.
There you go.
It'll pop up on Google. But NimmerComedy.com has everything there in one place. All links to my social networks. Plus, all my social networks are Nimmer Comedy too.
Perfect. So. All right. Well, thank you for making time for us, Nimmer.
Thank you.
Comedy 103.1.
Oh, it's such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.